Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to the podcast this afternoon. We have the honor and the privilege of interviewing Mr. Craig Petronella, the owner and founder of the Petronella Technology Group. Craig, thank you for joining us this afternoon, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Cool. Yeah, thank you. Now, we did some background snooping on you. We didn't, like, do a background check or anything. Don't worry about that. But we looked up your bio on LinkedIn. We looked you up on, you know, on your website and on Google. And you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career and how you kind of got involved with cyber and compliance?
Sure. So I started Petronella Technology Group back in 2002. So a long time ago, about 18 plus years now, started off as more of a computer consulting firm, and in 2006 really specialized deep into cybersecurity, found that a lot of the folks that we were working with needed some help with their policies, procedures, and what's called their security controls. So we started providing security as a service and SOC SOC services to them at a fraction of the cost of them hiring employees to do the jobs. So we've been doing that, like I said, since 2006 full-time, and now over the years we've helped several different verticals such as healthcare with HIPAA, financial, attorneys, and the latest that we're helping is federal contractors or those that do business with the Department of Defense for the new CMMC certification requirements that came out on the 31st of January. So we have a wide portfolio of different clients that we help and with the various regulations that they face.
Okay, cool. Now, does your company have a presence in other countries as well? What's your geographic market that you primarily serve?
Yeah, so our hometown is in Raleigh, North Carolina, but since we're a virtual company, we do business with companies all throughout the United States as well as through the world. We have some current clients that are through all of the states. Most of our clients are in our backyard or in the neighboring state line, so North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia. But with the new regulations, we've been helping folks all across mainly the United States. We do have a few that we've helped out of the country as well.
Okay. Who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it the small to medium-sized businesses? Is it the Fortune 500 or a combination of both? Because, you know, businesses are now under the gun, you know, based on their revenue size for GDPR and the CCPA. So I'm assuming you probably hit more large kind of companies? Or?
Well, it's a bit of both. So the best profile of a customer for us is the smaller customer that's 15, 20 to 200 or 300 employees or so. That's ideal. However, we help the startups, the folks that are just getting started. We help them. We have special services and products that we have created for that audience. And we also help the larger organizations like the hospitals. We provide consulting and policies and services there in that space, as well as the bigger enterprise, the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000.
Okay. Now let's do a deeper dive into your product and service line. I'm at your website right now, and it looks like that you do a lot of work in the managed security realm, NIST security, and the HIPAA security. Can you kind of expand a little bit more, please, on your products and services that you offer to your clients?
Sure, absolutely. So, we have a wide portfolio of services. Most of on the smaller spectrum, the smaller clients, the small businesses, there are those that come to us for fractional, what we call fractional services. And what we mean by that is they can outsource a certain type of role, like a CIO, for example. They can get fractional CIO consulting from us. So the smaller guys typically don't have a very high level of what we call cyber safety maturity. So we help them create policies and procedures based on the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is NIST for short. We help them create the policies and procedures for their small business. There's about 18 of them that fit most small businesses based on the NIST cybersecurity framework or the CSF. There's also NIST 800-171, which is a popular NIST certification that is for more mature organizations or businesses that work with the government in some fashion. And we work also in the NIST 800-53 space, which is more of the outlined security control area. There's various security controls. An example of a security control, a basic example would be antivirus software on your computer. So that's an example of a security control. So for the smaller folks that don't have a high level of cyber safety or maturity, we help them get started. We help them create. We do an assessment, a security risk assessment. We figure out what are they doing, if anything, now. We score their practice, figure out all the jobs to be done. We come up with a blueprint and a game plan on how we can help them. And we often start with consulting services to help them write the policies and procedures that they need, customize them specifically for their firm, and then adapt and map the policies to the appropriate security controls. So there may be some things that they have to buy, which we'll advise them on, give them options on where to buy the security controls or the things that they need. They may choose to outsource it back to us as a managed security service. That's certainly an option. So we go through all of that with them on a consulting basis. And then at the end of the day, when we're all finished, we do another security risk assessment, see if there's everything dialed in, and then we help them with their penetration tests moving forward, their training, provide security awareness training for all their staff, their testing, and finally their certification.
So would you consider yourself to be more of a managed service provider per se then? Kind of like a one-stop shop for your clients?
Not so. A managed services provider is more of a generalized IT firm. We're more of a managed security services provider, or MSSP.
Okay.
We do provide MSP services, but more of our services are focused in the cybersecurity and compliance area. So sometimes what happens is the companies that we work with may already have a relationship with a managed service provider, and they have a good relationship, they want to keep that relationship, but that particular provider may not have the depth of knowledge that we do in the cybersecurity space, because cybersecurity and generic IT are very different fields now, and it's kind of like going to the doctor, you go to the general practitioner, and then you get a referral to a specialist. So we're on the specialist side of the spectrum. So oftentimes, folks may have a relationship with a managed service provider and they may want to keep that relationship. So what we'll do is we'll partner with them and help them with the cybersecurity, the policies, procedures, the security risk assessment, the penetration testing, or all the security-focused initiatives.
Okay. Do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us, or any client testimonials that you're at liberty to kind of disclose to our audience today?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, there's a ton of reviews and testimonials on our website. I can't call out or name out particular clients, for confidentiality reasons, but the ones that are listed on our website are obviously public information. We have tons of five-star reviews on Google that attest to our certification and our knowledge levels.
Okay, excellent. Now, what separates your company from the rest of the crowd? And obviously, there's probably, who knows how many, over 2,000 plus cybersecurity vendors or MSSPs. Why should a customer come to you and say, "Hey, Craig, I need your services versus these others"? What's your differentiating factor compared to your other competitors out there in the marketplace?
Sure. It's our depth of knowledge, our number of certifications, and our continuous drive towards excellence. We've got, like I said, tons of reviews that attest to our skill sets. I've written personally over 10 books now on Amazon in various niche topics, such as the cybersecurity framework that we talked about with NIST, the CMMC, generalized cybersecurity, HIPAA. So it's going to be our wealth of knowledge The other part that makes us different is we test and vet a lot of the vendors that are in the marketplace. There's a lot of fluff stuff that is really marketed well but doesn't live up to the task in regards to cybersecurity. So we have a lab that we use to test various types of software and hardware and different platforms at our data center in Raleigh. And we're constantly building that Rolodex of vetted clients. So we built a 22-layer patented cyber safety stack. And what we mean by that is we find various solutions that fill the security control layer, and we're constantly looking for the best. And we bundle that together in a unique and proprietary way, and our goal is to make our clients unhackable. And the clients that sign up for our service at a managed security service, they get as many of those layers as they can afford. And the more layers, I call it the onion concept, the more layers that you can put in place and put a force field around your firm, the more protected you are from penetration and from the breach. So our goal is to make our clients as unhackable as possible. And I feel like we do a really good job of that. And we have the testimonials that show that.
Yeah, excellent. Now, let's get more specific here. I've done a podcast on the CMMC probably a couple of weeks ago, actually. Now, that's going to be the up-and-coming thing here, I think, this fall. And long story short, that's, I think, if I'm correct, that's where the contractors that work for the DoD, they have to be certified at some level. But can you expand into more technical detail for our audience what exactly the CMMC is all about?
Sure. So the CMMC is the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification. There, originally back several years ago, Carnegie Mellon University was hired by the DoD to create the CMMI. And then they went back to them to create the CMMC. And there's five different levels of the CMMC that the DoD released on the 31st of January. The first being very basic, cybersecurity hygiene, and level five being very advanced and very implemented, and the firm can show supporting evidence of all these activities, such as security controls, policies, procedures, very mature, and can show supporting evidence that it's all being done and it all works. So those are the varying levels. What's interesting about the CMMC is it's heavily based on NIST, N-I-S-T, or the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, NIST 800-171 and NIST 853. However, you can think about it as the 2.0 version of that. The NIST 800-171, which is still being used now, as well as the 53, the CMMC, the goal is to simplify it a bit, especially for the smaller firms, make it a little bit less expensive. But ultimately, I see it being a replacement. And I also see the CMMC bleeding into other industries such as healthcare for HIPAA. So HIPAA came out and was signed into law in 1996 by Bill Clinton. 1996 was a really long time ago in the cyber world. So the CMMC could prove to be a great replacement in the future for HIPAA. It could also bleed into other industries outside of the federal contractor space. So I think that ultimately the CMMC will provide good things for folks, but there's a lot of confusion and there's still blurred lines at the moment. So we're helping folks with consulting to get the CMMC on various levels that they are looking to achieve. But we're starting with the first level, CMMC level one, and then we're moving them up as new information gets released by the Department of Defense. Now, the twist on the CMMC and what makes it very unique and different is back when the Department of Defense required their supply chain federal contractors to have cybersecurity, they were using NIST 800-171 and 53, but it was a self-attestation process. There was no third party coming in to check things. Now, with the CMMC, there is a third-party accredited auditor that will need to come on-premise. Well, let me back up. They haven't clarified if the person has to come on premise or if it can be done remotely, but there will have to be a third party audit done to get the CMMC level of certification that you require. And that will be a separate fee that has to be paid for that. And service providers, including ourselves, will have to get that as well as the end user. So that's the big differentiator, the third-party audit. So there's no self-attestation anymore. Now you have to show the evidence, the proof, and you have to get through the audit.
Now, who does the CMMC affect per se? Is it just the primarily the defense contractors, or is it anybody that does work for DOD in general?
Anyone that works for DOD is most likely going to be subject to a level of certification. If you are a DOD contractor that makes a plastic part for a missile, for example, and you want to be able to get grant money from the DOD to supply in the supply chain, you're going to be required to have a CMMC level. Oftentimes, it's going to be level 3 or higher to be able to remain in the supply chain. So if you don't get through the CMMC, you're effectively going to fall off the supply chain and you're no longer going to be able to bid on opportunities.
Okay. Now, what is the connection between compliance and cybersecurity? I mean, they both are such amorphous and, you know, big terms. What's the connection between the two of them in your view?
So they go hand in hand. You've got compliance, which is heavily paperwork driven. So, for example, you could have a sanction policy in your organization. And a sanction policy may define what happens if an employee does something wrong that you said that they can't do. How do you reprimand them? What's the documented process for that? And then are there any controls that make sure that that is what's defined in the policy is supported? So, for example, there could be physical security controls. You can get an RFID key card to be able to enter the building. And if your employment is terminated, you may no longer be able to use that key card to get into certain areas of the building or any part of the building for that matter. So you've got policy that defines what you can and can't do, and then you've got security controls that help automate the policing of the policy. And then you have what's called the mappings, okay? And then in addition to both sides, the policy and the security control side, you also have to show proof and supply supporting evidence. So that's where there's the connection of you can't just have one without the other. You can't say we're doing all this stuff but then not be able to show the evidence and the proof of it. And the cybersecurity side comes into play on the security control side. So like I gave an example earlier about antivirus. Antivirus software, whatever brand, make, or model that it is, most antivirus software nowadays is only 5% effective. Yes, you heard that right, 5% effective. So what do you do about the 95% that it can't touch? Well, you need other security controls to help it, and that's where I was getting at with the onion concept. You need to have other things in place, such as training, security awareness training. It has to be done continuously. In addition to training employees, you need to test the employees. So you can't just train them and not test them. You have to figure out a protocol to train and test accordingly and then have a system and a process. So think about policy as defining the process, and cybersecurity is the policing of that process.
Okay. What are some of the typical gaps that you and complaints that you see? Is it just the lack of adherence to like the GDPR or the CCPA, or people just don't really care, or there's the lack of controls? What are you seeing in your when you go out for a client engagement?
Sure. So we always start to get a lay of the land with what's called a security risk assessment. That gives us an idea of how mature the organization is. And quite frankly, most organizations are not very mature at all. Most have either nothing in place or they have a small level of things in place in regards to the cybersecurity side, like maybe they have antivirus in place or maybe they're doing some patching. But they may be weak on the policies. They might have some policies from an HR manual or from an HR company, but oftentimes they're missing important policies and procedures. So we help them create the missing pieces, create the policies and procedures, and then we help them put in place the cybersecurity controls that they could afford.
Okay. Now, how much will cybersecurity dictate the compliance regulations? I mean, we're now, you know, of course, we're now seeing all this stuff staying, you know, taking full force now with COVID. I think that's kind of propelling, you know, data privacy, data compliance a lot more now. So how will these trends in cyber affect these regulations?
So I think with the advent of COVID-19, with more people working remotely and more people working outside of the quote-unquote enterprise office, now there needs to be some adaptation of cybersecurity controls on those endpoints. And what I mean by that is if the employer doesn't own the endpoint at your house, meaning you're using your home computer, and you're doing work for the corporation on your home computer, there needs to be adjustments to particular policies. In this case, it would have been called the BYOD or bring your own device policy. That policy would need to be updated, and the employee would have to accept certain software security controls to be put onto the endpoint. And so, for example, you can't use like the free antivirus and then do work. You need to have a commercial version of antivirus that's managed by the employer on your endpoint device. And that's just a small example, but other examples could be you may be required to use what's called a VPN or a virtual private network to be able to connect into your office. But there needs to be an increased level of security controls put in place when working outside the office in the COVID-19 era that we're in right now. So as far as that goes, there's going to be more controls, more training that's needed, and again, going back to testing. So just because everybody's not in one spot anymore and everybody's spread out, it makes cybersecurity a little more challenging. So I think that there's going to be more controls that are needed and more consulting for companies that don't have a mature model.
Okay. Now, speaking of COVID, how has that changed or altered the cybersecurity landscape as it relates to your business and your clients? Are they now being more cognizant of compliance issues, or is more of a downtrend, or what are you seeing in terms of what you specialize in?
Yeah, so at the beginning of the whole COVID crisis in the March timeframe, we actually had a surge in business, and then it tapered off a bit. There's still a lot of cybersecurity work that needs to be done. There's no delay that, for example, the CMMC put out a timeline. They have not delayed anything in regards to the COVID because they know that this stuff is important. It's considered essential. So there's no delay in needing to in a company that is subject to CMMC. There's no delay in getting that in place. So if you're an organization that needs to achieve the CMMC, whether it's level one or the most advanced of level five, you can't wait. You have to do it now. So I do think that, and I have seen that there has been some delay or a stretch of the approval process, meaning folks are still coming to us saying they need help with this, but as far as getting the work approved and starting the project, sometimes that has been delayed based on the COVID-19 and people are dispersed everywhere. So I have seen that as well. But as far as the need for it, the need is greater than ever. And the DOD, from the CMMC lens, as well as healthcare and HIPAA, there's no free passes on any of it. It all has to be done, and it has to be done as soon as possible.
Okay. Now, how serious is the, are the feds with the DOD about the NIST framework and the CMMC certification? Is it just something that they're throwing out to mandate, or they really are going to, like, audit people that are doing work for the DOD?
Oh, yeah. No, they're they've approved the third-party accredited auditing process. That's been approved, and that is now mandated now. So if you don't get CMMC and you don't get the audit done, you fall off the supply chain.
Well, okay, that's pretty cut clear, right?
So if you've been doing business with the DOD before and you want to continue to do business, you have no choice. You have to get the CMMC.
Right. Now, how far-reaching do you expect the CMMC to be in the coming years? Do you think it's something that's going to have a lot of tentacles and so forth, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's what I was saying or touching on a little bit earlier. I think that the CMMC is really going to spread into other areas such as healthcare. I do think that eventually it may overtake HIPAA. I think it will potentially take over SOC 2 Type 2 and maybe bleed into ISO 27001, which is the European equivalent. But I do think that the CMMC is going to bleed into other areas. I hope, or my hope in the future is that it does, and it makes things more simple for folks, because there's so much variance with various verticals, meaning there's FINRA for federal or for finance, there's HIPAA for healthcare, there's ISO 27001, there's SOC 2 type, there's all this stuff, and there's all these regs. And really the bottom line is all these regs want the same thing. You mentioned the California Privacy Act and GDPR. They all are after the same thing. The security controls are the same. If, for example, we use encryption as a security control example, there's no different way to encrypt the endpoint to meet GDPR or HIPAA or the CMMC. You just have to do the control and then show proof and supporting evidence that it's being done. But the only difference in the reg is going to be the language and then the policies that are written around it. So I think that the CMMC could be a good thing to help people standardize and better understand the framework.
Okay. Now, is getting a CMMC like getting an IT cert? I noticed you have a bunch of IT certs, like a CISSP. Would you equate that same process, or is this a much, much more in-depth process to actually prepare for it? And what's the best starting point, really? Let's kind of hit those two points.
Sure. So the best starting point is to do what we call a readiness assessment. So we help a lot of folks, like I said, start off with a readiness assessment, figure out all the jobs to be done, provide consulting to them and options on how do we get this work done. Some organizations might be able to do some of the work themselves internally. They may have some staff that can help get the jobs done. They may not. They may want to outsource that back to a company like ours to help them do the work. The certifications that you mentioned, like the CISSP, those folks that we employ, they are best suited to help with these job duties, meaning writing the policies and procedures, mapping the appropriate policies and procedures to the security controls. That's a job function and a role that's best led by a CISSP. But as far as the getting through it all, in the end, a third-party accredited auditor will have to be they're the ones that will have to have a separate certification to be able to audit a firm. And the same firm can't do both, meaning my company has chosen to provide the readiness consulting, the managed security services, and the secure hosting and basically the functions. But we will not do the audits. We will hire a separate company, as mandated by the DOD, to come in to check our work, to make sure that we're doing at the level that we're after, and then we'll have to pay for that audit, just like our clients.
Now, let's talk about some hot button. Well, before we do that, what kind of work have you done with HIPAA? That's another big thing. I mean, you know, I feel that the HIPAA is kind of being overshadowed with the GDPR, CCPA, and the CMMC, but what kind of work have you done with HIPAA, and how far-reaching is that? I know this legislation was, I think, passed, if I'm correct, in the early 90s, I think, with the Clinton administration, if I'm correct. What have you done, and how far-reaching is it for the healthcare industry?
Sure. So I've done a lot of work in the HIPAA space and written several books on HIPAA. It was signed into law in 1996 by Bill Clinton. Basically, you've got two groups. You have what's called the covered entity and the business associate. The covered entity is your chiropractor, your physical therapist, your general practitioner, your cardiologist, you name it. If they're providing medical work to the consumer, then they are a covered entity if they accept insurance to pay for the services. That's the encompassing piece of it. Now, if you have a what's called a business associate, could be defined as a company that the provider is working with to do a particular function. What I mean by that is your doctor's office may have what's called EMR or electronic medical record software, and that EMR software vendor in this context would be considered a business associate, and they are bound by HIPAA. So you've got the two groups that are both bound by HIPAA. And like I said earlier, it's really similar to the other regulations. You need currently at this moment 18 policies and procedures, and you need security controls to map to the policies and procedures. You need to have security awareness training and many other security control layers in the organization, and you have to be able to supply supporting evidence that all this is being done. HIPAA requires a security risk assessment be done each year, as well as what's called a penetration test, and you need to provide supporting evidence that these things are being done as well. So both the covered entities and the business associates need to be doing these things. Now, a lot of the smaller practices, like the small chiropractors or the small PT companies, they, especially the ones just starting out, they're not typically aware of how far-reaching HIPAA is. And sometimes they falsely think that they are not bound by HIPAA, and they don't do a lot of these things that they're supposed to be doing. So then the risks are really high as far as a HIPAA audit, and the fines are super steep. They range typically from $5,000 all the way up to $50,000 per infraction. So, for example, if you're a small medical practice and you have an employee that took somebody's chart and put it in their car, but they forgot to lock the car and somebody stole that medical record, well, if it was a stack of medical records and it had 20 patients' information there, maybe the employee needed to do some work to do billing or something, but they didn't properly secure that patient health information. If that was stolen and there were 20 records that were stolen, then the infraction would be multiplied by 20. So the fines skyrocket through the roof and will really bury a practice if they don't comply with HIPAA.
Okay. Now let's kind of segue then into the cyber threat landscape just in general. Let's talk about some hot button issues if you don't mind. One of them is the Internet of Things called the IoT, the Internet of Things. And to me, that's kind of a very scary proposition because, you know, everything's all connected together. You know, there are all these kinds of, you know, virtually, physically, everything's all connected. And all these connections they increase the attack surface for the cyber attacker. And I don't like it. I mean, I'm kind of an old-fashioned kind of guy. I still drive a Honda Civic 2003 car. I mean, what are your thoughts on the IoT? I mean, do you have like a smart home or a smart car or anything like that? What do you think of it from a cyber standpoint?
Like you said, it's definitely it makes the cyber safety or cybersecurity landscape much wider and more difficult to secure, right? So if you've got, you know, there's always the delicate balance of convenience and security. So in the most secure fashion, you can't work. and it's not, you just can't function. And then there's always the delicate line of what do you allow and then how do you police it? So for example, maybe you have a Ring camera and you connect that thing to the internet and you secure it. Well, there needs to be education on how to properly secure that device. And this is a good topic because a lot of people may not know about how to properly secure their IoT devices. So again, it follows the same frameworks, like I mentioned earlier, that the medical practices and the federal contractors have to do with CMMC. So it's the same stuff. It's the same jobs that need to be done. It's just that now we have a non-professional that has to go through it that may want to seek professional help to get it done the right way. So what I mean by that is these devices, they have typically a login and a password. So you're going to want to make sure that the login and the password are secure and using a complex password. Ideally, you're also using what's called multi-factor authentication. So you have a one-time passcode sent to email or text message to further enhance that security layer, that security control layer. But all these security controls are now in the hands of the consumer in regards to the IoT device. So that's why there's actually websites out there, and I've been in the news and done presentations on this, where people will buy these IoT cameras, for example. They'll set them up, but then they don't have any idea on how to secure them. So there's actually websites out there that show live footage of all of these unsecure cameras all throughout the world. So it's really dangerous from a cybersecurity perspective on how these things get into people's homes. I'll give you another example, Amazon Alexa. You should not be using an Amazon Alexa in a regulated space, meaning don't put an Amazon Alexa in the lobby of a medical office. You know, that thing is listening all the time. And if somebody is talking about their patient health information, that would be a HIPAA violation. So you've got to be really careful on the capabilities of what these IoT devices can do. But more importantly, you need to assess the security of them and properly secure and harden those devices. And just like anything on your computer or your phone, any kind of software, all those software programs on your phone or your endpoint, they all need to be secured and patched. And the more stuff you have, the more IoT devices you have in your house or your office, the bigger the job you have, because you gotta constantly be securing these devices and the software.
Okay. Now, another thought I had is, you know, about the C-suite. You know, every time there's a security breach, you know, everybody wants to point the blame and have the CIO or the CISO kind of have them get fired. Now, obviously, the buck stops with them. But in my view, I think a holistic approach needs to be taken first, in which there's a comprehensive forensic analysis that needs to be done. And then from there, then you kind of point the blame. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you think CISO should just be fired immediately after there's a breach, or or should there be more accountability held? I mean, in my view, I think all employees are responsible for the cyber security of their own company as well as the, you know, C-suite. You know, everybody has their own fair share. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think so cybersecurity and digital forensic services are primary functions of our specialty. So forensics, I would agree that if something happens, there should always be a forensic investigation to figure out what happened and why did it happen. But I do agree that there is a shared responsibility that across all employees in the organization. And all of these things, like what are you supposed to be doing, they're also all that work, those jobs to be done, are all supposed to be outlined in the policies. So if the organization is mature and has the proper policies and procedures and security controls in place, the risks are much, much lower, exponentially lower for a breach. However, if you have an employee that makes a mistake, they clicked on something wrong, or they opened something that they shouldn't have, but they thought it was from somebody that it said it was from, but it really wasn't, again, it goes back to policies, procedures, security controls, and testing. So if you've got training and testing as part of the protocol for the organization, which it's an essential layer, it should be, and you find through a forensic investigation that a particular user was phished and tricked into clicking on something, well, then the conclusion of that investigation may be that that particular person gets fired because they didn't properly follow protocol. But it depends on the situation. Every situation is different. But my point is that the more mature the organization and the better policies and procedures and testing and security controls, the more often that these functions are being done and being audited, the better for the organization. It's kind of like fire drills, constant repetition to get it right. The firms that are not doing this stuff on a regular basis, they're going to fail, and they're going to fail fast.
Okay. Now, artificial intelligence, I don't know if you've done any work on that or not. I'm currently working on a book right now. Now, AI is finding its big, big segue now to cybersecurity with regards to automation, you know, and filtering for, you know, false positives for the IT security team. It has its advantages and disadvantages, and, you know, obviously the cyber attacker can reverse the AI and do false and do bad things with it, right? Have you done any work on AI, and what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have. I'm MIT certified with artificial intelligence and IBM Hyperledger certified for blockchain. So, I have a depth and wealth of knowledge in both areas. In regards to AI, you're exactly right. I mean, AI can be used for good or for evil. It just kind of depends on the situation. But it still goes back to proper cybersecurity and hygiene. So if a firm is using AI, for example, and they have coded something that's doing a particular function, the code and the cybersecurity to protect that intellectual property, it's all the same stuff, right? So even maybe they're not in a regulated space, they still need to be protecting this information and then policing it to make sure that the AI is being used for good and not for evil.
Now, cybersecurity insurance policies, since you do a lot of work with compliance, you know, as we said, you know, HIPAA and so forth, had you do any work with cyber insurance policies, and have your clients asked you for guidance on that?
Yes. So when we provide what's called incident response services, oftentimes one of the questions in the front end are, so if a company calls us and said, oh, we had a breach, one of the first questions is, do you have cyber insurance? And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Oftentimes, the next advice that we give them is, do they have a data privacy attorney that they work with? Because we feel, from our perspective and our experience, it's extremely important for companies, medical practices, and firms of all types to be engaging with the data privacy attorney or legal counsel before they hire a forensic firm like ours, because they want to make sure that they're getting the client privilege protections legally. So that's super important, and that's we almost mandate that step. Some companies refuse, or they might have their own legal counsel, or they kind of brush it off, but it's so important that the company get that legal counsel in place for that client privilege, because what that does is that really holds all the information that we find in the forensic investigation private, and it's just super important to do that.
Right, because I still think that the cyber, you know, this insurance policy thing is still kind of messed up, because I think, in my opinion, from the people I've talked to, I think just because you purchase a policy doesn't mean that you have all blanket financial coverage, right? So, for example, if an SMB was hit and they file a claim, they may not get the entire payout, because I know there's a lot of other stuff that they have to go through, and they still have to prove their worth.
You're exactly right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and they still have to kind of like prove their worth even after the fact they've been awarded a policy. I mean, the insurance company can still audit them, you know, whenever they want to, right, to make sure that everything's still in place, to make sure that they're not a high-risk client.
That's right. But that's also why we recommend engaging legal counsel, because the legal counsel, one of the first things that they're going to do is to go through the policy, figure out what do they have coverage? If so, what does it cover? What does it not cover?
and figure out those lines, right, and give clarity to the customer. Oftentimes, we will be asked for recommendations on cybersecurity and cyber insurance. Oftentimes, also, some of the products and services that we sell come bundled with cyber insurance as well. So there's different kinds of cyber insurance. There's different coverage levels. There's different types of things that it covers and it does not cover. So you definitely want to talk to a cyber insurance specialist to make sure that you get the right type of coverage. But the bottom line here is, yes, you do want to have cyber insurance. It's best to have an attorney help you with going through it from a legal perspective to make sure that you're not taking on unnecessary risk. But also, I don't know if you know this, but oftentimes in the cyber insurance policy, they're requiring you to do the cyber hygiene, meaning a lot of the policies say you have to be doing the security risk assessments, you have to be doing the pen tests, and you have to be doing all the things that I've been talking about. And if you're not doing those things, just because you have the cyber insurance, they may deny your claim.
Okay. Now, finally, Craig, as we wrap up our show in the last 15 minutes, just a couple more, thought-provoking final questions here. What are your thoughts on the cybersecurity threat landscape? I mean, last year the pundits were saying, oh, yeah, it's just going to be ransomware, phishing, maybe some crypto jacking here and there, critical infrastructure attacks on that. But now with COVID, that's kind of shaked the whole thing, the whole empire, upside down. So what are your thoughts that the cyber threat landscape is going to look like this year, even going to next year for that matter? I think critical infrastructure is going to be the next big target. What are your thoughts on all that?
I think that, power grid, SCADA, all of that is definitely high-level targets. But I think on a day-to-day basis, I think that phishing, whaling, and CEO or C-level fraud, wire fraud, those types of things, ransomware, I think that those are all top attack types. That's why it's so important on the training level, because the human layer is the weakest point in any system, right?
Okay. Now, finally, do you have a laundry list of items that you tell people what they could do to mitigate the risk of becoming a victim? Now, obviously, we all are at risk. I mean, you can fortify your lines of defense as deep as you want, but you're still at risk, right? Everybody is. But what do you tell clients, family, friends, what have you, what they can do to help mitigate that risk and how to be proactive in case they are hit with and if they are a victim of a cyber attack?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's not so easy to just say to go do this, this, and that, and you're all safe and secure. It's much more complicated than that,
right,
which is why I always recommend a security risk assessment as the starting point. Have somebody check if you're, a medical practice. You should be doing the security risk assessments anyway, but if you haven't, get started. Call us or call a company and have them do a security risk assessment. Have them show you all the jobs to be done. There's just so much to go through. It's not just a one-size-fits-all. It's a continuous effort. So even for the home user, you can still be doing security risk assessments at the home level. The recommendations are going to change on a day-to-day basis or a weekly basis. We have certain recommendations now, but they may change in the future as far as, what type of antivirus, what type of router you should buy, or how do you secure your iPhone. There's all these different things that can be done. But and I've written about these items of, like you said, a laundry list of things that you can do to harden your security in some of the books that I've written. But the information's changing. The best advice I can say is test your system. Find out the jobs to be done with a security risk assessment first. Figure out how mature are you. Find your maturity level. Outline the work to be done. Figure out what are you capable of doing yourself, or what do you need help with, and what do you want to outsource, and put in as many layers as you possibly can. I mean, some really basic stuff that you can do that's going to be generalized and pretty much apply to anything is never use the default password to any kind of IoT device or any device that you buy. What you should be doing is changing the username and password and make sure that you have a quote-unquote policy or some type of protocol that how often do you change that? Change your Wi-Fi passwords every now and then. Make sure that there are certain lengths that I read was it should be 22 characters in length and complex as far as the length goes, because if it's too short, then it could get cracked by brute force. So there's all these things that you can do for a mobile device or an iPhone or a Droid device. You want to make sure you're using a passcode of at least 6 digits or greater. You want to make sure that you don't share that passcode with anyone. You know, these are all different things that you can do for good hygiene. One of the you know, humans do not work well with passwords. They're, you know, they use the same password on different websites. That's a big no-no. You want to use an encrypted password manager and link the password manager to what's called a hardware token, such as a YubiKey, or they have new devices now that that you can use as well. But my point is that all these things that I'm rattling off are different security control layer items that you could be doing and should be doing on a regular basis. But then it goes back to policy. How often do you do them? When do you audit it? How often do you check? So, you know, one of the big things that we see too is with Office 365 nowadays and Gmail, people aren't properly securing those systems and the hackers know it. So they search and sniff around for who's the administrator, and then they try to find or break into the user account. And oftentimes they're not using multi-factor authentication because when they set it up, whether it was their IT guy or whoever set it up, they didn't properly secure it. So then what happens is we get calls for incident response from folks that get hacked and they had wire fraud and they lost $500,000 through a transaction that was intercepted because hackers were spying on their email for months. So, I mean, there's all these things that you can do to mitigate and secure, harden the security, but you have to start with the security risk assessment to figure out what do you need to do first.
Okay. Well, finally, Craig, as we close up our show here, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you? Where can we buy your book set? Is there like a publisher site, or is it all just on Amazon, or do you have links on your website where we can buy that from?
Yeah, you can go to my website at PetronellaTech.com. Or Amazon has all my books. You can just search on Amazon and find them. There are links on the website as well.
Okay. Craig, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, and we hope to have you on a future podcast soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Take care, everybody.
Take care.